So, Andrew, I want to do this, but what do you want to call it?
Well, I was thinking we'd call it the enemy sessions for a couple of reasons. The first one, I was reading some Pound recently, and Pound mentioned, I think, of Lewis, that Lewis was his only critic, his enemy. And it was, in a sense, it was like the highest compliment I think Pound ever paid anybody. He said, like, Lewis is the only person that really pays attention to my work and would take the care to point out the error in my ways or to genuinely critique me. And I think that's really, that's missing. And I was hoping we could do some of that.
Okay, so we're going to be in the spirit of that. Of that in relation to Eric McLuhan and his son's blog about his father's collection of Marshall's library, right? That's what we're looking at.
Yeah, okay. And like in my mind, I'd love it if we were heading towards, if not this session and one of the followings, to look at doing a review of that media informal course just recently issued by Marshall McLuhan and Eric McLuhan. So whether we actually get there or not, different story.
Yeah, you said issued by Marshall McLuhan?
You know, it's Marshall McLuhan is listed as one of the authors in this thing.
Okay, all right. Okay, so what we're talking about is a blog, and you go to inscriptorium.wordpress.com. It'll be on our site, but it's called Inscriptorium. Inscriptorium. And what it is that Eric's son, Andrew, is living with his father in Ontario and doing an inventory of Marshall McLuhan's personal library, which is a very useful thing to do. In my discussions with Gerald O'Grady, he always complained that he didn't have access to that library as a scholar. O'Grady is a McLuhan scholar. He spent 2 years in Ottawa going through the McLuhan archives. He's qualified to look at Marshall's stuff. He actually visited Marshall at Wychwood and saw the library in Marshall's home, saw how Marshall indexed his books, and he's been wanting to have access to them to do some scholarly inventory. So that hasn't happened. Eric has not given him the opportunity, but it looks like his son is being given the opportunity. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, he's really in an enviable position. I would love to have had access to those materials. But he's, from what I've seen of this blog, it's great. He's, Andrew's bringing a lot of stuff to light that hasn't really been discussed at all.
Right, so instead of just reading the blog, anybody who's listening to this, go to the Inscriptorium website or blog, and click on whatever we're talking about and follow along with us. You know, you can look at what we're doing, because I'm going to skim through it. The first thing I noticed in the first line of the first entry, which is December 21st, 2010, that was the day of the blood moon, very significant day in history, December 21st, 2010, and it also was Zappa's birthday. Okay. You have the first line under a picture of Eric, who's apparently in the back room, staring into a computer or something with a hat on, and then you have a statue in front of in the foreground of the image with a little hat on it. Don't know if that was intentional. It says Herbert Marshall McLuhan, born in Edmonton, Alberta, July 20th, 1911. Now, any biography of McLuhan, anything, anywhere, who's who and all that, lists McLuhan's birthday as July 21st. So I once remembered Eric talking about the moon landing in July 1969, that they landed on the moon on McLuhan's birthday. I think they landed on the 20th, but it, you know, overlapped the many hours of the landing, maybe went into July 21st. So was Marshall's birthday always July 20th? It's like Wyndham Lewis, you know, not telling anybody his real birthday. I think even on his gravestone. So is there a conscious attempt not to give out the exact date, or is this just a mistake? But Andrew, if this is a mistake, correct July 20th to 21st, or inform us why it is the 20th and not the 21st. Anything you want to say, Andrew, about that?
Yeah, I was pretty certain that it was July 21st, but that's what McLuhan said publicly about his own birth, but yeah, who knows?
It may be. So there's a question for you, Andrew. Find out if it was really July 20th. Okay, so he goes on talking about his father, Eric McLuhan, and the working relationship that Eric developed after the coming of the United States Air Force. And he says, the story of their collaboration and its depth and importance to the work of Marshall McLuhan is largely unknown. Now, those who've read the books of Marshall McLuhan and Eric, like lots of me, you know that they were working together, and it's known, their collaboration. What do you think he could be referring to here, that what's unknown? What do you think is unknown on first impression here, Andrew?
I've heard a variety of stories about, say, for example, Counterblast, or not Counterblast, Culture is Our Business. A few of those other, I guess, later works that Eric was said to have collaborated on extensively without editorial or authorial acknowledgement.
Okay, all right, so there might be that part. And many other books. Well, definitely, I mean, I know personally that Eric was in dialogue with his father for many years. And that's how Marshall made books, talking to somebody.
Yeah, he did. Eric did some really amazing work as well, indexing and developing the materials for the rewrite of the Nash thesis as well. And I said I would be willing to bet that's probably where this Media Informal Calls came out of. But, I'll stop there.
Okay. Now, I've talked to George Thompson through the years. George Thompson has a different view of what Eric says. He denies what Eric says about this and that. Now, I don't know if George's view is true, but I'm just telling everybody I've heard a different story about what Eric has claimed, what he's done with the tetrad and that. I asked George recently again. Barry Nevitt says he discovered the tetrad with Marshall, and George agrees with that because Eric was away when they were first developing it in 71, 72. So, just on the record, I have these other thoughts and other input about Eric's role. I'm not saying Eric's lying, but there is, you might have an argument if you get Eric, Barry, and George in the room.
Oh, and Don Thiel as well. Don Thiel had a totally different view as well.
Yes, not necessarily complimentary. So Andrew says about Eric, complimentary about Eric. Okay, so Eric, those are things I've heard. We all have gossip made about us, and that's just on the table. So let's look at what Andrew says. Working with my father, Eric, a great man, a giant of a scholar of a rare kind. Now, I know that Eric's work in Finney's Wakeness thesis is excellent and unique, but a lot of it comes from his work from his father. And Don Thiel says that most of the PhD, not the PhD, but the book, The Roll of Thunder in Finney's Wake, is recognizable to Don from the notes that were kept in Laura Secord candy boxes from the seminar that Don was part of in 1950-51 with Marshall when the group went through Finney's Wake. But I don't think Marshall knew about the Thunders and talked about the Thunders back with Don Thiel. If he did, it was never talked about until Eric brought it out of him. And certainly Eric, Marshall told me in 1974 that Eric's essay for the papers, essay for the James Joyce Quarterly, where he first laid out the structure of the Thunders relating to the levels of exegesis and the five parts of rhetoric and technology and all that, said that, and Marshall said Eric showed that he was a master of this material. So, there's that opinion from Marshall himself. So, a giant of a scholar of a rare kind. Let's see, what else? I've sat in on Eric's classes, the one back in 1978-79 in the Ontario College of Art and Design. Interesting class. Not great, but not bad. But it was unique because at least we had someone talking about Marshall McLuhan's work with young students. And they did produce an interesting billboard that was put up over Queen Street. It was a class project. Different ones invented their design, and then there was kind of a competition, and one of them got picked. And it was sort of like a Trump Leal or a backwards image. You ever seen that in the archives, that actual billboard that they made, the class made in 79?
I don't have a picture in my mind of what you're talking of.
Okay, well, do you know what I mean? See, they made a funny or an odd billboard and rented the space over Queen Street, downtown Toronto, and the billboard was displayed, for a few weeks or something, and it was like sticking an absurdity in the middle of the rows of billboards.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I may have a picture of it in my archives, but the archives are in Connecticut. So, a humble man who is so undervalued as to be a tragic figure. To the degree McLuhan is undervalued, that's true. You know what I mean? Who is he undervalued by? Only a few people in the world truly realize what a resource is. I've always realized what a resource is, and I've always talked about what he contributed with his thesis, or at least what he had written publicly. I've never heard anybody else talk about Eric's work up till maybe the Lance Straight group. I think there's an appreciation, Eric, in that group that surfaces, you know, in the last 10 years. What do you think about that?
About McLuhan's relationship to the MEA, or just the general idea of him being underappreciated?
The MEA appreciates Eric.
I can't really talk for those for the New York crowd. I do get a sense that he's kept at arm's length.
That's interesting, because Wayne Constantino told me about the time he went to the Media Ecology Conference, 2003 or 2004 with Eric, and Wayne himself, who had a bit of an influence on Eric and Eric on Wayne, thought it was disgusting how they ignored him or Eric or the real McLuhan as they saw it. He thought these people were basket cases. Now, that was Wayne's view. I mean, he told me about it. He was shocked. And from Wayne's point of view, I think he said they fulfilled your statement, kept Eric at arm's length. But I don't know. I mean, even Don Thiel was kept at arm's length. Matter of fact, he dropped working with them. They were so ridiculous in their criticism of whatever work when Don was trying to get his own PhD published with them. They just didn't have a clue about what he was doing and made ridiculous criticisms. Now, does that mean that Don can't take criticism or Wayne can't take criticism? Maybe they don't understand the generation that the MEA represents. But only a few people in the world truly realize what a resource he is. No one worked as closely with Marshall. No one understood or understands him and his work as intimately. I would say that's true, that Eric, I've probably said that to the degree that I understand. I'm one of the great understanders of McLuhan. I would always say if there was a person who understood more than me, it was Eric. But I don't find Eric engaging in the present very much. Though just lately he's got a book out, but it's been a long time, and I've heard the work that Joe Keough did with Marshall. I've talked to Ted Carpenter, and I see Eric is in more of the 70s area, but Barry Nevitt was key in that period. And then there's people that Marshall worked with that weren't in the book world, executives and other walks of life. So I don't know if this is an exaggeration. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I guess it comes in phases. Like, in a sense, Kenner was there at the start when, arguably, McLuhan was changing as fast as he was. And then there was Don Thiel for that, again, that wild period throughout the early 50s, again, which was, according to Don, was the most fecund period of McLuhan's intellectual life. And, the fruits of that were realized at Concordia and have since headed over to the west coast of Canada. So, Eric...
Wait a minute. You're saying the fruits of Don Thiel or of McLuhan's early period goes to Arthur Croker and Concordia? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, via Thiel. And I'm just trying to illustrate the fact that that different collaborators at different times got different things. And I think I'd be hesitant to say that Eric was exposed to the full spectrum of Marshall's career.
You'd be hesitant to say that, meaning that you would think he was exposed to the full spectrum.
No, I don't think he was in the same way. Like I think Eric's work is incredible, but I don't think he got perhaps some of those wild times. He just simply wasn't there.
Right. And as we do this, we welcome Eric to join us and discuss this. We're trying to get a dialogue going, prompted by what his son is writing. You know, I mean, let's just bring Eric out. Let's talk about it. Talk about what, is this his grievance or just his son's own sentimental view of the situation? See, when one starts to read Marshall's work and get involved in it, we had it tonight on the on our McLuhan Maui conference. The young person, Richard Altman, I think his name is, they start reading McLuhan, they get amazed by it. What? This guy's incredible. How come nobody's talking about him? Now, there's, you can get in this mood that why the heck is anybody not paying attention to Marshall? And Eric is still here. Why aren't you talking to him? You know, paying attention. You know, you do get swept away by the power of Marshall's work when you actually pay attention to it.
Yeah, it's I've put a student on to understanding media recently, and he's a classically trained musician, and he just flipped out. He went straight away. McLuhan's is writing this essay as if it's high art, high music.
Right, right. And so, you know, people are the lucky ones see the value of McLuhan, and they wonder why no one else has been speaking about him. But Marshall's in the tradition of Wyndham Lewis. Wyndham Lewis was great and ignored. So I when I was reading this the first time, I said, well, wait a minute. Marshall was meant to be ignored. You know, that's I think somewhere Marshall talks about, you know, Wyndham Lewis is valuable and will be ignored, and justly so, because that's how good he is. And Marshall certainly considered himself in that tradition. So it's, and I think Eric knows this. I think it's a matter of pride that he's ignored. He thinks, well, that shows the value of my art. There's that aspect that Andrew may be missing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that came out in again in the conference today when we're talking with Mike. Was, you know, even at the height of the second wave of McLuhan's fame, and there's nobody at the coach house. Well, essentially, there's nobody there. There's a small gang of interesting people, but there was nothing there for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, there was nobody to take advantage of Marshall's. You mean in the Wired magazine phase?
Yeah, I mean this figure of incredible greatness is essentially operating in a tiny, tiny little void with so few people.
Yeah. Now this is what Mark Stallman used to bring up with me once I met Mark in 1988, and then into the early part of the 2000s, the naughty knots. He kept saying, "How if Marshall was so great, why isn't there any legacy? Where is the people who continued the work?" Well, I don't know if there could be a continuation. The Manipian tradition does not leave disciples.
Yeah, exactly. Did you ever read Liz Jeffries' thesis?
No, but I heard her speak on it and talked to her a bit. I know she documents the suppression of McLuhan technically in the 70s, begun by her teacher, Don Thiel, she says, and then goes into Jonathan, what's his name? Jonathan... his name
Miller
over in, yeah, Jonathan Miller. So is there, okay, am I, is that the point you're making? What is it about Liz Jeffries?
Oh, she spends hundreds of pages about this, what she calls as a forging of a negative consensus about McLuhan. Essentially, it's a flash way of saying the conspiracy of having McLuhan's legacy shut down. And she it was a real bitter thorn in her side. It generated a decade of work. That, yes, question, where's the legacy?
At the York Conference of McLuhan, organized by Bruce Powell in March 97, very quickly on the first day, Liz jumped up in the audience. I don't know if many of us knew her yet that well. And she jumped up and she went on about the conspiracy. There was a definite conspiracy to suppress McLuhan's work. Now, there's a whole argument that there was no conspiracy. A Manipian is proud to be ignored, or proud that people are disgusted with him. That is the Manipian tradition. And I don't think Mark is a Manipian, but his writings were Manipian and on one level. And the fact they're ignored is normal.
Yeah, I mean, didn't he always say that talent rides in a secondhand car?
Yes, yeah. He was not. He celebrated the amateur in a way, and he said the electric age favored the amateur. That's what he considered pop music, is amateurs, right?
Keep it lo-fi.
Yeah, lo-fi. So what in the tailgate part of today's Monday night seminar, we got talking about what would you do if this young person, Altman, was saying, you know, why didn't anybody make a 10-year effort to make McLuhan's point that we needed a television fast and really get the legislators to do it? I kept pointing out, well, there was no time to do that, and it wasn't that serious, even though Marshall proposed a series. I think Marshall acted out the drama of being King Lear about the fate of all of us in this crazy technological overdrive situation. So Marshall was a character in a play, conscious character on one of his many levels. He was an actor. He was a guy crying because his eyes had been burnt out or something. You know, some tragic figure from classical Greek. Which kind of activity is in all filtered all through Finnegan's Wake? He was acting out Finnegan's Wake. That was a script.
Is it both of the Homeric modes? He was definitely both of those.
What are the modes?
So presumably one is comedy, one is tragedy.
Oh, yeah, very good. That's the two masks plus. He was looking at the electronic simulation of the two masks.
Yep.
Which I call the Android meme layer. So, okay, so I'm not falling for a giant of a scholar of a rare kind, a humble man who so undervalues to be a tragic figure. I think Eric, as a manippy, might actually spank his son for writing this.
No. Like, it's they're Canadians, you know. They're in physical space. They probably look at that big building called University of Toronto and, you know, think that that's the reality, and that what happened with maybe Derek de Kerckhoff being the director as opposed to Eric McLuhan. The apparent dishonor that St. Mike's and University of Toronto have, over those years.
Yeah, and there's certainly the McLuhan family in the early 90s did not respect what Derek was doing and got Nelson Thal, just for the record, I was witness, got Nelson Thal to lobby the Bob Rae government to get rid of Derek de Kerckhoff. It didn't work, but that was an expression of Corinthian with what Derek was doing with the McLuhan name. They wanted the McLuhan name taken down from whatever they perceived Derek was doing. Now, what Derek was doing might have been the best that could be done. You know what I mean? He kept the McLuhan world out there, I don't know, in the art form world or something, somewhere out there. Did a lot of flying around the world and talking to groups of people. So he kept the memory of McLuhan alive, and Eric may not have been able to do that. But then the Manipian wouldn't consider that important to do that. I like what Zappa said when they ask him, how would you like to be remembered? He says, well, I hope I'm not remembered at all.
Yeah.
I think Marshall wouldn't mind that, and I sometimes, as I knew Eric, he might be sympathetic to that view himself. Because Eric is, in my interaction with him, he had a Manipian sense of humor.
Oh, he's a funny man. He's a very funny man.
Right. So we go on. He says, when I hear about all the events, literally hundreds of events around the world, it saddens him that people aren't asking Eric to be involved. Well, Eric's been asked to a couple of conferences, but maybe more. So he said, this is not a surprise, really, but a tragedy. At his peak of fame, few really wanted to hear what Marshall had to say. They just wanted to hear him say it. Okay, now Andrew's flipping over to what we're saying here. Hey, it's not a tragedy. It's not a surprise. So he should continue that line of thinking, but he goes, I digress, and I'm not from Paul. I found more than filled his father's shoes, and I know I'll never be able to do the same. What I can do is pay attention, learn as much as possible, drawing out my father with questions, learning about the history of intellectual collaboration, father and son, such as world has never, to my knowledge, seen. What do you think? Have there been any father and son collaborations before? I mean, Billy Howe and his sons, and Bobby Hull and his sons played hockey, professional hockey. It's like we're talking about the book part of Marshall, and Eric was part of the book genre of Marshall's output. But that's not all of Marshall's work. Marshall said that the Montreal Canadiens kept art on ice. So we're talking about art, and it was common in the baby boomer generation that many famous parents of baby boomers ended up working with their father, their sons. It was a new phenomenon in the information society, and like dynasties were carried on in Hollywood, in Mordecai Richler's son, you know. So what is it we're saying here that's never been done before? Certainly Marshall provide you had, there was a lot to learn when you studied Marshall's background, his PhD and all that. And for Eric to stick with it and learn a lot of his father's stuff and go back and read the original documents, yes, not many people did that. So he did. He was a serious student of his father. I don't know if you call it an intellectual collaboration. They did do books. Anyways, questions piling up. To be able to add, if not scholarship of the same caliber, at least some context, texture, and intimate detail. So far, we haven't gotten a context for their collaboration. The context is the fate of McLuhan in the Woody Allen world and everywhere else, and the dislike of McLuhan at the U of T and all those things. We purposely know that Eric could have taken over the Center for Culture and Technology, but there was a faction at the university that was not going to have Eric take it over. And they used the alibi that no one could carry on Marshall's work. In other words, the university got it right. You can't carry on a manipulative's work. There's no legacy, and it's not a problem there's no legacy. So no work, nothing more had to be required. The manipulative tradition had to carry on and perform in new ways. And, you know, yours truly is one of the exemplars of that. I'm so Manipian, I'm not even limited to the Manipian environment. I actually have something to offer. I'm not a cynic. So he says, I hope that my observations are less tedious than interesting, more informative than restated. They are informative, what we're going to read. It is my honor to be able to share them. So praise Andrew for taking on this task. There may be other things to say about this first entry, but that's the we don't want to. I don't know what you say. I don't want to bore people, but maybe we will bore you.
Yeah, look, even your friend Peter Montgomery has written a little link.
He's written a little link?
Little comment at the bottom.
Oh, I didn't see that. Go down the bottom. Sue Hurley says, well written, Andrew, and admire your sentiments. I hope to read more. I don't necessarily admire his sentiments. His sentiments are natural as a son, but they're not, so far, not dealing with the issue of what Peter, what Gerald Grady says, no one is telling me what McLuhan was. You know what I mean?
Yeah, on that, just as a little sideline gossip thing, Logan was billed to do a talk at Ryerson last week, I think, setting the record straight on McLuhan, and apparently it was a no-show.
Yeah, now that is strange. He needs to explain that. I saw the ad for Michael told me about that. I mean, what's up there? Maybe he got ill. Does anybody care that he didn't show up? Why is there any apologies or explanations? See, there's a lot in that one. Maybe Logan is taking on a manipulative angle, too. Maybe the Logan will finally get it. So then Peter Montgomery, who is an old friend of Eric's and has worked with Eric, I understand, done business stuff or projects, a couple anyways, he says, the whole blog is excellent, Andrew. Well, no, it's great, but I wouldn't say it's excellent after the first thing. Okay, it's just great. Let's see where it's going to go. He says, it's great to be reminded of the old stuff, says Montgomery, and to run into new that I didn't know about. Yeah. I look forward to doing a closer browse as time allows. Okay, rather phatic. All right, so let's go on to the next one, unless you got something to say. What are your impressions? I've been going on. You've read this column, right?
Yeah.
Do you have anything about?
No, I was so far, I mean, it was an introduction. Like, what comes next is pretty cool.
Okay, the very next one called Non Sequitur, December 28th.
Just materials from here on in. It's just little bits and pieces of a lot of cool stuff that a lot of people don't even address.
Right. Okay, so the first entry, December 22nd, 2000, he, quote, and he's quoting Eric talking about Marshall. He deliberately modeled his style on Macaulay, his early style anyway. I'm going to go turn some heat on. That's just an aside. Now, for the first time I read, thanks to to dark matter, I don't know if he wants his real name said, dark matter, went to Winnipeg and got the Manitoban articles. Which, did he tell you the story? He went to the library and the people were there and they had just put all those Manitoba McLuhan articles online like a week before. And they were shocked that someone was interested.
That's great.
Yeah, so they were happy too that someone was interested. So he found out that he didn't really have to put it online or do as we have on our own site. It was already up there. But anyways, he got copies, and I think he got hardware copies and brought them home, or just took, I don't know what he took, their copies, their images or something. But we are beginning to post them on the McLuhan of Maui site. And so I got to read, I've always wanted to read them. I got to read the Macaulay essay just about 4 days ago. And after I read it, I, being aware of what Eric said here, I said, yeah, Eric's right. And definitely the way Marshall talks about Macaulay, what he appreciates him, in the remarks he makes is a model that I can see Marshall, early Marshall, following. Now, you've read the PhD, the master's thesis, is it, on George Meredith?
Yep.
Yeah, now, any thoughts about Macaulay there that you could say that supports what you're saying?
No, I'd have to go back through. I do remember reading the Manitoban articles. The one that really stuck out for me was where he's discussing the Germans.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, that's it. That's worth talking about later. But so the thing about Macaulay, as I read it, the way Macaulay would interact with everybody, he was like generous to everybody and helping everybody. In some ways, some people used to say Marshall was rather naive and would interact and enjoy or help anybody or something. That part of Marshall, which I saw, I see him projecting in Macaulay. And if Macaulay was that way, it's like something that inspired Marshall. That's what I was struck by. All right, so is that it for that?
Well, unless you're going to go further with that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
we can always come back to it.
Yeah, it's just that, I mean, Don Thiel talked about there was a kind of naivety by Marshall. In other words, generous to everybody and thinking that everybody was interested in getting the truth. You know, everybody's equally intense about it as he was. And it sounded like Macaulay was like that kind of personality. Okay, he says, Dad said this as I was entering, quote, Miscellaneous Essays in the Lays of Ancient Rome by Thomas Babington Macaulay, 1926. On page 526 of the volume, Marshall writes, the quote, the effect of the poem is greatly heightened if the circumstances under which it was written are justly estimated. So that's figure ground, right? Looking at the context for social environment that evokes the reason for the poem. It's like, what is the audience doing? What are its circumstances that the effect of the poem is targeting? So I don't know if Andrew understands that sentence this way, but I'm assuming Eric gets it, and that is an important sentence.
Yeah, it's an odd thing, though, like, because he's looking at material that's outside of the poem, so which is sort of, to the best of my knowledge, contrary to the new critical praxis. So, like, is that...
No, wait a minute. I'm not getting you. What Andrew or Marshall is looking at the material outside of the poem?
On Marshall, according to this note. The effect of this poem is greatly enhanced if the circumstances under which it was written are justly estimated.
And you're saying that's not the new criticism technique?
Well, no, because it's looking for things that are outside of the poem as opposed to the internal structures of the poem itself.
Right. Now, if what you're saying is an accurate interpretation of new criticism, because...
Which,
you know, Marshall makes in his biography that Marshall got all his techniques from I. Richards, just applied to new media. But, and I've heard it said, I never took I. Richards' course, but I've read many times about how Richards was the first to look at the text itself, like almost like he didn't tell anybody who wrote it, which he did in that test in Practical Criticism, right? People, nobody knew what they were judging,
yeah.
Who wrote what, correct?
Yeah.
So that's a really good point that Marshall wasn't a new critic.
Well, it depends on when's he's doing this note, you know? And
Yes. No, that's important. Would he have gone back? Yeah, he could have gone back and looked at it. Yeah, so we're saying then that Marshall's mature method was not the new critical method.
Assuming that note was written after he's come back right. from Cambridge, in which case, yeah, for sure.
Oh, I think it's after Cambridge. To me, it's something he would write in the 40s. But it's interesting to take it that it's not the new critical approach. Very interesting. That's a good point, Andrew. But it is the figure ground, figure and audience dialectic
totally.
That Marshall was all about. And if you've read enough Marshall, and maybe Andrew has, you would know that is Marshall's strategy or dictum or method or approach, right? Now he's saying you have to know the context of what the poem is written in. If it's greatly heightened if the circumstances under which it was written are justly estimated.
Yeah, that's wild, like if you apply it to media. So what do we take from that? So if we read, the effect of the media is greatly heightened if the circumstances under which it is created are justly estimated. Does that also assume that the effects of media are negligible if you don't understand the circumstances?
Good. Yes. Okay, the effect of the media, the effect of television is greatly heightened if the circumstances under which it was written are justly, under the circumstances or culture in which it is introduced are justly estimated. And that was the definition of the medium. The medium was the culture that the new technology was introduced to.
Yep.
So that supports the interpretation that the medium is the previous culture, and you figure out what is the outline and bias and services and disservices of the previous culture that TV is going to change, upset, intrude upon. So, right? So yeah, that is...
TV is going to have a different effect on those Greeks.
Right. So let's go back to what you said. I didn't get... You said, the way you first read this, you said, so do it again, if you can remember. You were saying, so this is not the medium as the message? That's how you took it.
Yeah, no, it was just a substitution. So if you say the effect of the media is greatly heightened, so you could flip flip it around. So if the effect of the media is seriously lessened, if the circumstances under which it was written are improperly estimated or not understood, that doesn't hold. So that's kind of odd.
Yeah, and... Who is doing the estimation?
Yeah.
If the circumstances in which it was written are justly estimated. So it's kind of goes either way, and I would say you can take the side that it is the medium as the message he's saying there. And but if I try to look at it differently, you know, like be a contrarian, the effect of the poem was greatly heightened. You're saying the effect of television, its effect is dependent upon the audience
estimating the circumstances.
Yeah, but we know that the media change people regardless of what they think they're evaluating.
Yeah, in Project 69, McLuhan says specifically, understanding is no antidote, effectively.
Understanding is not an antidote.
Yeah, it's only half the problem at best.
Right. Part of understanding is realizing the futility of normal understanding. Okay, that's good. Okay, so he says this is a dated volume, typical of his Cambridge year books.
There you go.
The year's books bought in the early to mid 1930s. So, yeah, you need to know. So we need to know when he wrote that, because he actually... He doesn't, it's wrong if you take it in terms of what he was thinking immaturely in the 1930s. But you know, in his essay, his articles in the Manitobum, there's early, innocent, trying to look at the hidden ground in his essays. Like he's trying to look at the hidden ground in the German character.
Yeah, or quite literally the sky. Yeah.
Okay. Marshall writes several long pieces and makes small margin notes, observations, and quotes. So So what do you mean? Where are these long pieces? And then makes marginal notes in his own pieces? I don't. Is he say, where are the long pieces that are written?
Who knows? Presumably, he's referring to those articles you wrote for the Manitoban.
Oh, okay. This is a heavily annotated volume. And now, if we say typical of his Cambridge years books, heavily annotated, so
this, he hasn't got to his calculus yet. You know, like in later years, and you see those little that little calculus. You know, F minus G slash C cm. Yeah. Cm you know, just the old those phrases.
Right. So maybe he's pointing out what Macaulay says. He's summarizing what Macaulay says. Macaulay is not saying the new crit thing. This could be just recording what he thinks Macaulay is about.
Yeah, fair.
Okay, so different ways to look at it, but we appreciate Andrew pointing this out, right? This is very interesting. It would be great to get an idea of when the date is, if it's possible. Can you tell by the notation pencil?
I'd like to see a picture of the page.
Yeah, yeah. We should do some carbon dating on the lead of the pencil.
Yeah, no, okay, I want to see the page. I want to see like how his handwriting is and all these other things.
And what is Macaulay? Okay, we'd look up page 526 if there was a copy with the right pagination, same pagination as Marshall. So we can look up to see what's on page 526.
Yeah.
That might help. Okay, I won't be doing that shortly. I ain't looking up the book, right? I don't have it. It's not here in Maui. So it's up to you. It's up to you and your library resources to check it out, Andrew.
Yeah.
Okay, the job of cataloging Marshall's library is less arduous than fascinating. And he wants to go through every book. He doesn't have time. Some of the margin notes. Now, this is what Gerald O'Grady wanted to do. He has the time and the knowledge of Marshall's work to let me in there. I'll detail this stuff. You know what I mean? Now, what's interesting is Gerald O'Grady visited Eric in October, in that period, October, November, to see how he could get the archives, what the library, bring it over into the German exhibition, which so far has not gotten off the ground, I understand. But I don't know what he proposed to Eric. But, you know, I was thinking later when I saw Andrew's column that the fact that O'Grady told Eric, hey, this has to be done, it might have inspired Eric to say, yeah, we got to get this done, but I'll get my son to do it. You know, this might have been prompted by O'Grady.
Yeah, fair enough. It's, I just can't help think it would be easier just to have turned up at Google and just got, you know, a couple of million bucks and 10 people and just done it real fast and real good.
You think Google would support this?
Yeah.
They're interested in McLuhan?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
Well, because they're Google. They have to be.
Okay. Why? Why do they have to be?
Well, I would assume that the reason why they are where they are is because somebody's thought some good thoughts along the way. And if you've thought good thoughts about the electric environment in the last 50 years, you've got to be interested in McLuhan within one degree of separation. But doesn't Vince Cerf have something to do with them?
He's interested, but I don't know. It reminds me of what we discovered with Michael Edmonds. He could not apply McLuhan when he actually had to create a new environment at the Fort Book Robarts Library. We heard that today, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. But you know, it's like Bill Gates bought all that art and had it positioned in his mansion or something, special kind of collection. Yeah, Google should put this feather in their cap, right? But
anyway... Yeah.
How could you do that to a Manipian?
You know, that would be the things that I would have to confess to.
Okay. Confess to?
Yeah, well, you know, Michael was having to own up to having destroyed the educational apparatus of the Western world. And so, you know...
But you're saying you would have to confess to what?
Yeah, you know, if I had to face that situation in 20 years' time, yes, Bob, yeah... I catalogued that Manipian. I'm sorry. I thought I was doing a good thing.
You mean Michael? Yeah, you get into the Michael Evans syndrome of regretting what you did.
Yeah.
Okay. So he went, wishes he had the time, newspaper clippings. You know what's funny with this new Skype? You know, you bring in the new Skype program, and it keeps popping up people. James just came online. You know, these little, do you have that? The new format of Skype, and these images pop in and out telling you who came online and who just went offline. You got that?
Yes.
Yeah. So the first time I'm using Skype in this context and see this happening.
It's all about participation.
It's a new environment. It's having incredible effects on my medium. Okay, so many of them have margin notes, newspaper clippings, which would have either interested Marshall or that he would have considered relevant to that book or author. When I did the later archives, there was lots of boxes of newspaper clippings and files. He certainly, like Mae Brussel, scanned the newspaper and looked for material. And he once said that all you have to do to write a book today is gather up some newspaper articles. And that reminded me, we discovered today in our MUM seminar, that Gutenberg Galaxy, were you there for this insight? That the Gutenberg Galaxy was written like a student writes a paper after 95, just cut and paste.
Cut and paste.
That's never been said before, has it?
Not to my knowledge.
I mean, that's what stood out. When one read Gutenberg Galaxy back then, you were struck at how many quotes the guy quoted.
Yeah. That's one of the great things about it.
Yeah. So he was anticipating the Generation X or the next generation's study habits or paper manufacturing habits. So he said, I read a bit about the man who cataloged James Joyce's. He went through it page by page, made precise notes. Mind you, the total library consists of less than 500 volumes, and I'm looking at 5,000. Then he says, something you should know, quoting Eric, sand, cat litter, makes a wonderful vice for holding something at an unusual angle. And then he says, he's quoting Eric, on repairing a butter dish lid for my mother Sabina. So he goes into looking at the lid. So he's noting his father is a not a gadget lover, but he can work with gadgets, likes to repair things, which is fine, except when the object is a lamp, which makes us nervous. Not that Eric's not competent to do minor electrical work. It's just, sure, repair a butter dish, but get a professional to do electric, right? So Dad shows me this plastic container which had some cat litter in it, which he had used to support the butter dish lid as he glued it, and it dried. I can only hope it was not used litter. I'm fairly sure it was not. Now, I heard from people who knew Eric when he was young that he was quite a good gadget or mechanical toy tinkerer or something. Have you heard of that?
I've spoke to him the couple of times that I've been fortunate enough to speak to him where he said he was exceptionally adept with the early computers, and that he indicated that he actually made some active choices to not pursue that further.
He decided not to develop his mechanical narcissism, or what is it, narcissist as narcosis? What's the line in Understanding Media?
He didn't relate it in those senses, but like he gave the real sense that it was that he deemed it as a fruitless pursuit, and that it would distort his person in some way. But his natural temperament was is computers, software,
and tinkering, and a gadget lover, a guy. But he had he was aware of potential disservices of it.
Yeah, and the same way as that he's, or at least he's suggested to me that he's a little bit anti-engineering.
Right. Well, that is, and Eric would point out, I think he's pointed out in some essay that the devil was the head of the engineering faculty, that the devil is an electric engineer, and the engineering and the Freemasons are the devil, or agents of the devil. Have you ever heard? Ever seen Eric say that? I saw that somewhere. It was Marshall. Marshall did it himself. He was registered in engineering in Manitoba, and after a year or so, he dropped it and went to English and studied the effects of engineering.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
he took a stance, a Chinese stance, and killed the inventors, tried to stop the inventions. You know, how they would kill the new inventors in those Asian feudal societies.
Yeah. But I think there's the tone of those two transitions are quite different.
Right. And so you have maybe Marshall. I mean, what's Mark Stewart told me that Marshall had several patents. So maybe he had an engineering ability. He built the boat and all that when he was a kid. But so maybe Eric inherited some of that. But like his father, suppressed the impulse, all for the sake of media ecology.